Welcome to the GeoMob Podcast, where we discuss geo-innovation in any and all forms, whether for fun or profit. Hello, Stephen. Great to see you again.
Great to see you too, Ed. Lovely to see you.
It's been a while since we chatted, so we thought time for another episode, catch up on what's been happening. So
absolutely. There's been quite a lot happening, I guess. It's been over a month since we last chatted, so right. Yeah, lots happening.
Well, let's start. First of all, this week I had the pleasure of attending GeoMob Berlin.
Wow, yes.
2 days ago. Stephen, GeoMob Berlin is absolutely thriving. We had our biggest turnout ever. We had 5 great speakers. We have set the date for the next one, and we already have three speaking slots filled. Really, really fun night. Lots of new faces. Also, there's now a hardcore of regulars. Also, we had our esteemed colleague Arno.
Arno came out, didn't he?
He made the trip and he stayed with me in Berlin. And so he was there representing the London faction. It was great. We have a great mix of different people. Very fun afterwards in the drinks. If you like, I can quickly take us through the talks.
Go on, take it. Just a question before you take us through. Of course. Is it, being in Berlin, is it still in English or is it in German?
No, it's in English. It's English. All the all tech events in Germany, in Berlin, that I'm aware of, at least, are in English. There is... I would say Berlin is probably one of the big winners of Brexit, Stephen, in terms of many young people from all across Europe that, you know, previously might have gone to London. Now they go to Berlin.
Right.
So there are a lot of Eastern Europeans, Scandinavians, some British as well, Southern Europeans, everyone from everywhere. So, and actually three of our speakers, 3 of the 5 speakers were not German. So,
okay.
First speaker was Georg Held, who he talked about maps for getting children, helping children get to school. So right. Basically, you know, very normal when school starts. In Germany, it is quite normal that children walk to school or ride bikes to school. One unfortunate trend, of course, in society is that more and more children get driven to school. But that is not the case in Germany, particularly not in Berlin. And it's very normal to see children on their own walking around, even young children, and on public transport and things like that. So, but the problem is, of course, that the typical model is that the school just whips up a bad PDF map, and that's not really so functional. So basically, he's been working on a project to kind of get better data, bringing in all the richness of the data of OpenStreetMap, also data, of course, on where accidents happen to try to warn people that, you know, this is a dangerous crossing and things like that. So interesting project, also a very, very beneficial project for society. So good luck to him.
Great.
Next up, we had a guy, Evgeny, so not a German, but living in Germany now. And he has a... This is pretty cool. He has a project called, he pronounced it as Davarich, which has kind of a very Russian pronunciation. But actually, if you look at it closely, it's Da war ich, which in German means there I was. And it's a...
right.
So that means there I was. And it's kind of basically his little project to kind of aggregate all kinds of location data about himself and visualize it so he can see where he was and generate statistics about where he was. And things like that. So, very cool.
We had somebody else doing something like that with a personal location server, didn't we?
Well, so there is this project OwnTracks, which he extracts data from OwnTracks, but he extracts it also from other sources.
Right.
And so that's kind of, he's kind of a layer above OwnTracks. So next up, we had Mike.
Right.
This was a very interesting one, and I'm hoping to get him on the podcast, actually.
Okay.
He has been working for many years. So as you all know, the traditional model of rendering of maps is that you kind of pre-render all these tiles or vector data and whatever, and then that is served to the client, and the client just kind of displays it. And with tiles, it's literally just displaying images, And with vectors, it's kind of getting the data and unpacking it. But his idea was that computers, particularly GPUs, so graphical processing units, mm-hmm. are now so good at rendering visual data that you could do it all on the client side, even despite massive data volume. So he has now started a project or a company called Vulkan Maps, where he kind of explores this idea. And afterwards in the beer garden, he showed it to us. And it's pretty interesting, actually, how quick. I mean, it's just amazing when you think about, you know, you could kind of zoom in, zoom out, and like the billions of transactions that have to be happening to very quickly and succinctly render the map. And that this is possible just on a normal laptop is pretty phenomenal.
But these GPUs are the same GPUs that are used in massive arrays for large language models, aren't they?
Yes, exactly. Exactly.
You know, so they're
same type thing. So I don't at all claim to be the expert here, but basically the idea is that this type of chip is so efficient at handling these types of mathematical computations that new possibilities are opened up. So, as I said, I'm hoping to explore that with him on a podcast episode in the coming weeks. Next up, we had Chiara Phillips, who from the U.S., and she described herself as an amateur cartographer. So she has a full-time job.
We all.
Some more than others, I guess. She has a full-time job unrelated to cartography, but on the side, she kind of makes maps and does things. And so she talked about kind of a framework that she uses to decide how to design a map and whether the map makes sense and is fit for purpose and things like that. So very nice. And then finally, we had an academic, Igor Katov, who this was very interesting. So it seems that across the EU, there is a movement. I don't know if there's going to be a legal requirement or not, but basically, traditionally, to try to understand how people move around, we've had very bad tools, right? We use things like surveys, which obviously has a margin of error and selection bias, or just very basic things like in census data, we have data like, you ask people, where do you live and where do you work? Mm-hmm. Okay, and so we have the start and the end point, but we don't really know how they get from A to B. But the thing is, actually, now we are, of course, all carrying these tracking devices around with us at all times, our mobile phones. And so in some jurisdictions, this data, of course, completely anonymized, is now being made available as open data. And so you can really understand how people move. And specifically, he cited the example of Spain, where this data is available. And it's not just available, but he and his colleagues have released a software package that makes it very easy to manipulate and use this data. And he showed us some very, very interesting visualizations that they had then built on the basis of this kind of, and it's not just, it is anonymized, but it's still broken down a bit, you know, by things like gender and age and things like that. So you can also, of course, time of day and things. So basically it opens up this whole new world of possible analysis. And this is going to be coming across the EU, actually.
Wow, that's because a while back, the mobile operators were looking to charge enormous amounts of money for restricted access to this data. You know, because it's valuable for footfall counting, shopping malls, and stations, and all of this. And they were looking to sort of extract a lot of money for that. So if that's going to be open data.
Of course, very, very interesting development. Maybe I should get him on the podcast as well, because I particularly enjoyed his presentation. Stephen, we then voted. We voted for best speaker, and this was kind of a weird shocker. We had a three-way tie.
Really?
Really, yes. So rather than create controversy by somehow breaking the tie, we just said all three won. So congratulations to Evgeny, Chiara, and Igor.
Well done to the three of them. And that means David at Splash Maps is out of pocket.
I sent them vouchers this morning, so three Splash Maps coming. So
great.
Anyway, that was very cool. Then we retired to the beer garden. I should also, of course, mention a big thank you to the company Toll Collect that hosted us. at their excellent venue. Very, very interesting company, actually. Maybe we'll get him on the podcast. So I don't know if you know this, but in Germany, about 10 years ago, they introduced toll roads. Mm-hmm. But they do it kind of a different way. Like, you know, in many countries, toll roads, you have physical booths, and then when you get on the highway. So in Germany, we have the big problem, of course, by being in the center of Europe. Countries, you know, traffic is crisscrossing the whole country all the time, even if it's not actually even intended for Germany. So, and so the government implemented a plan whereby trucks, only large trucks, commercial vehicles, have to pay a toll. And it's done via like these transponder devices. So yep, there are no actual physical toll booths or anything. Anyway, this company handles all that. He said 11 billion data points per day that they process. Wow. So it was interesting. It was cool.
Yeah.
Anyway, great evening. Lots of people there from the OpenStreetMap scene, from various startups, from various big companies. So I think we can well and truly say that GeoMap Berlin is thriving.
And that's not the only one that's thriving, because there was GeoMap Belgium just beforehand.
Correct. Unfortunately, I wasn't able to attend, but Stephen, I did in our last newsletter make the offer that anyone who attended all five GeoMaps this month would get a unique limited edition T-shirt. But unfortunately, I don't think that has happened. I don't think anyone. I myself am going to attend three. I made it to Berlin next week, Barcelona, mm-hmm. and then the following week, of course, I'll be in London, which is looking to be like a great event.
Yeah, and unfortunately, I'm not going to make that, but it does look like a great event and a great lineup of speakers as well.
Yeah, we actually have six speakers, which we had to do because there are just so many people volunteering. We have an artist who's coming, which I think should be very good. We have Scrambled Maps, who of course you interviewed on the podcast. We have an update from OSM UK. Some of these, I'm not even really sure what some of these are, but people volunteer, so we take them. So I look forward to being surprised. We have a talk about with the tagline, how maps and spatial thinking can be used for art and advocacy. So that should be very interesting. We have the startup Safest Way, who I think you put us in touch with. They were at GeoVation.
Yeah. They're very impressive. I like what they're doing. It's not that we haven't seen it before, but they seem to be, they've got a slightly different angle on it because they're doing some clever data collection on lighting at nighttime and things like that.
Very nice. And then finally, we have this company called OK Hi, which is a London-based company, but it's quite interesting because they are working on address verification kind of in the developing world, like countries like Kenya and things like that. So by using mobile technology, you know, somehow so that a bank, if someone claims they live at wherever they live, the bank can somehow validate that.
Okay.
Via mobile or via their service. I don't know a lot of details, but it should be very interesting.
Wow. Looks like it's going to be a great event.
So, right. And then finally, at the end of the month, of course, there's another GeoMap Edinburgh, which unfortunately I will also not be able to attend, but also has a very strong lineup. So,
and then to follow on from that, we've got State of the Map Europe in Dundee is that November?
Middle of November, I think the 15th, 15th, 16th, I believe. A weekend, middle of November. Yes, very cool. Very cool.
Yeah. Well, November in Dundee is likely to be cool.
Well, it'll be dark, I'm sure, about that. Yeah, I don't know. I'm looking into whether I can make it. Dundee, unfortunately, is also not the easiest. I mean, obviously, one can get there. It's just, I don't think there's a direct, easy option for me. No, but
there isn't a Berlin to Dundee flight,
No, I don't think so. But nevertheless, I'm sure many GeoMapsters will be there, and we'll have to. I'm hopeful we can get some of the organizers here on the podcast to preview the event in due course.
And there's also a Phosphagy UK in Leeds the 1st and 2nd of October, which is the first time we've had a single face-to-face event in the UK since COVID times. We had those little sort of distributed regional events, but this is actually a regular sort of couple of hundred people, 250 people, all in one place, you know, getting together, partying in the evening. So that should be a lot of fun as well. And the tickets are on sale for that now.
Well, so at least in the UK, I think people are kind of spoiled for choice in terms of geo events.
So we haven't talked about Open Cage.
All right. Yeah. So
is the business still there?
The business is still there, even though I did actually take a bit of holiday. But the business is doing quite well. What have we been up to? Kind of two main things since we last spoke. We launched our spreadsheet uploader. That has been running well. And we've been continuing to look at how people use it and improve it. We launched a nice new feature where, of course, maybe if you have a spreadsheet, you can upload the spreadsheet. But if you maybe just have some data, like, I don't know, in a text file or something, you can also upload that. But we now offer the ability that you can also just cut and paste your data and paste it in, which in some cases might be more convenient. But most of all, the most important thing is we've made the whole thing a lot faster. So whereas previously we would just kind of line by line process the file, now we kind of do it in parallel and speed things up, particularly for the paying customers, so that it goes much faster. And we're going to see how that goes, and then hopefully we'll crank that up even more and then also enable paying customers to upload even larger files.
Yeah. And you will continuously find the bizarre ways that people record and organize address data.
Stephen, just when you think you cannot be surprised, also, I have to say, it's so funny because the mental models that so many people are trapped in, you know, like people are like, oh, I have a CSV file. Stephen, they do not have a CSV file. But in their head, they call it a CSV file, and thus they select CSV. And of course, it's anything but a CSV. But,
And CSV is a problem just because of all the commas in addresses.
Well, of course. Then you need to have a properly escaped CSV file, or maybe you have a semicolon separated values or whatever. But there remains a gap between people's data and people's understanding of their data that we try to. We try to bridge that gap through the tutorials, through the help pages, through the and I don't know, Stephen, man. There are some people who just honestly, I just wonder how they function in life, because people will not read anything. I mean, no matter how big and large you make the warning that says like we were only going to for free trial user. You know, we make it very clear. We're only going to process the first 100 lines of your file because you're testing, right? And people get angry. They're like, "What? You know, I uploaded my million line file. Why did it not work?" I'm like, and then they insist. They're like, "I didn't. No, it didn't say that anywhere." And I'm like, I send like six screenshots, you know, showing all the very, but all part of the fun, Stephen. Yeah. So, that's what we've been up to. But now we have a new announcement. The other fun project I've been working on is our MCP, which it's actually been live now for a couple of weeks. But
what's an MCP? Explain to me. I think I know.
So remember,
we need Mark Tobias to come on the podcast.
Remember how like 30 seconds ago when I complained about people referring to a CSV but it not actually being a CSV? I refer to it as MCP, and I have to admit I don't actually recall the exact meaning of this acronym. But the idea is that you can connect an API into a large language model, and So we have now launched that, and we have it working. So that if in your text, you know, you say geocode these coordinates, or reverse geocode these coordinates, geocode this this address or whatever, behind the scenes, it then calls our API and gives you back the answer and plugs that into the answer. And you know, it gives you a little bit of detail, and then if you want, you can click and go deeper and get all the full detail and things like that. So,
is a good thing.
This is, for whatever reason, some people want to work in this way. So I have to concede, I'm not sure it would be my natural first choice for how to call an API, but you know, the kids are out there vibe coding away, and this is what they want to do. So.
And careful, because this old guy has also been vibe coding.
Yeah, you know what? It might be fine to let the vibe coding, you know, train glide on past you. But you know what? I have been using ChatGPT quite a lot. I've also been using Claude and asking them kind of geographic questions, and it is shocking how often they get things wrong.
Yeah,
very wrong. And of course, what's worse than that is it's not just wrong, but sometimes it's right.
Yeah.
And so some, you never really know, or it's wrong by omission. So like, I don't, you know, I think we discussed this example last time, but you ask it, give me a list of the provinces of Indonesia. And instead of giving you all 30, it gives you 25.
Yeah.
Right. So you don't know, you just don't know.
The only time you can use this stuff is when you already know the answer.
Right.
What's exactly the point?
Quite. So nevertheless, we now have the MCP, with the idea being that you can then query directly from inside the large language model. Or also, I mean, one thing that is interesting is this is a very, very fast developing space, which is one of the reasons we kind of wanted to get this out and start playing with it. You know, another use case that is actually fairly common is software developers with kind of the AI directly in their code editor. That is a use case where I could imagine you want to, I don't know, depending on if you're working with data, you might want to directly geocode from there. Anyway, it's there. We're going to announce all that, and we're going to see how people use it and what feedback we get, and we're going to learn. So.
Okay. I mean, I've got a couple of podcasts lined up talking to people about AI and geography.
Oh, please do. That would be great.
Because I think, you know, it's easy to just sort of poo-poo the whole thing and say, you know, it's riddled with errors and hallucinations and everything. But clearly it is doing some, you know, so people are finding really viable use cases.
We're going to see. I mean, I do think, at least I've detected amongst my peers when I ask them, it seems like, you know, now a healthy skepticism has at least arrived, right? Whereas previously people were kind of just, you know, this is going to change everything. I mean, if you go on, you only need to be on LinkedIn for about 10 seconds to see like 20 posts where people are like, you know, I just fired my entire team and, you know, the LLM is going to do all the work now, which... Not so sure about that one, but...
Not so sure about that, but I think, you know, your generation, let alone... You know, I mean, forget me because I'm almost senile, but your generation, who've grown up as coders, are going to be skeptical about this stuff, or more skeptical about this stuff. But I was reading something this week... one of the big banks, it might be JP Morgan, it might be another big bank, you know, they've got an enormous legacy code base, you know, which has probably been developed 25, 35 years ago, right? And they're using, they've built an LLM to actually enable them to read their code base and turn it into a specification. So they're not trying to actually write code to recode in a modern language and redesign. All they're trying to do is extract a spec of what the old code is doing and how it's doing it. When you think that nobody who's working on that code today was there when it was written. So on the Mapperry site, we have a map with pins on it that that are based on the locations of all the posts, you know. So there's about 2,000 clustered pins, and you can explore the map and click on the pins, and it's a route into the post, and you can see the pictures and all of that. And this was a plugin, a WordPress plugin that we've been using for five, six years now. And somebody hacked our, it uses Google Maps. And we were always, you know, the usage level was pretty low. So we were never, you know, we were well inside the however many thousand a month free tier that Google gives to everybody. And we got hacked, and somebody nicked our API key or whatever it is. And all of a sudden, I started getting bills through on my credit card, which it wasn't colossal bills, but it was still aggravating. And so we've taken down the, we've switched off the plugin, we've taken down the maps and cancelled the API key so that we're not charged for it anymore. And over the summer, hopefully, our friend, the genius Arno, is going to come up with a new solution that does the same thing but uses OpenStreetMap so that we can get back to having maps of maps in the wild without getting hit by people stealing our credentials. Okay, let's wrap it up and say goodbye.
Thanks for joining us today on the GeoMob podcast. We hope you enjoyed the discussion. You can get the show notes over on the website, which is at thegeomob.com. And while you're there, you can sign up for our monthly newsletter and find links to our accounts on Mastodon and LinkedIn so that you can stay up to date on all our upcoming events. We hope to see you at an event soon.